Music, play, books, relationships, and environments are essential for children's healthy brain development. What a statement, so close to my heart, and I'm so delighted to have Pip Reed from Using Music joining me this morning. Pip is on a mission to support professionals, parents, and children everywhere to confidently use music for social and emotional well-being. Hallelujah, baby! Pip brings 18 years of experience as a registered music therapist, classroom teacher, and clinical educator. Pip is also a mum to two brilliant humans, 6 and 8, gorgeous little brainiacs, who they continue to teach and inspire her to keep learning and find more play and fun in everyday life. Pip, you are a woman close to my heart. Thanks, Chrissy, for joining us on the Child Charmer podcast.
Thanks for having me.
So really delighted. Great. You and I connected after I ran the ADHD conference in Geelong, and we just got chatting, didn't we, over socials, and realised that we are just on a mission to educate and inspire people to understand the impact and power of using music with children, and it is free. It's the most easiest, most beneficial, free therapeutic tool you can use to enhance brain development, but that's why you're here. So tell me, back it up with the evidence and the research for all the teachers who are going to be listening to this particular series, which is all about education. Why does using music in the classroom matter so much?
Oh, it matters so much. Music, you're right, it's accessible, it is free, and it's something that promotes positive mental health. So that's important not only in our classrooms for our students, and particularly our vulnerable students, but also for us as busy, maybe working mums, busy working parents, teachers, educators, everybody. It's important for us as well that we have music and fun and joy and play in the classroom as well, to be able to connect with the students that we're trying to help inspire and help them to learn and grow and develop. So music is just so important on so many levels. In the early years for our younger children, we know that music is really, really regulating. So it's the first thing we do if a baby is crying. We pick them up, we're patting, we're shushing, we're rocking, we're using rhythm, we're using our voice, we are helping to soothe them and regulate them. Then as we move up through to the toddler years, when there can be communication frustrations and there can be meltdowns and all sorts of things, again, we use rhythm, we use music, we use our voice, play, everything, instruments.
And what was the one thing at the conference especially that just blew everyone away? Robin educating everybody about the vagus nerve, right? And all of those things that you've sort of already spoken about, the rocking, the rhythm, the humming, yes, the movement, the music, the singing, the lullabies, they come so naturally to us as parents when our kids are babies, but then we sort of tend to stop doing it as our kids get older, right? Or it seemingly becomes less important. Other things come in, like the TV or technology and those sorts of things, right? And we know that music lights up the neural pathways in the human brain. Can you talk a little bit to that?
Absolutely. So our brains are wired to receive music really well. And it's because a lot of these things about, there's a lot of new parts of the brain, like the prefrontal cortex, which was big in ADHD world, because we talk about executive functions and things about planning and organizing. Well, when a child might feel unsafe, so when they might feel in that fight or flight mode, you can't access those higher order thinking parts of the brain. But what you can access is the deeper parts of the brain where music is actually processed. Mm. So rhythm, breathing, they're processed in those deepest parts of the brain that you can still access there, even if a child is really dysregulated or we as adults are dysregulated. And that's why so much of what we're talking about is to do with take a big breath, trying to breathe, trying to use music, dance, rhythm. And you're right, at the ADHD conference, every speaker that got up was talking about connection and they were talking about music. And music is just so important. So it's our brains love it, we're wired for it. And for children in the classroom, children learn best when things are multisensory. So when we're engaging more than just talking to children, that's boring. So we need it to be multisensory. So we need to have them engaged in ways where we're accessing really exciting auditory processing systems, which happens when we sing, we light up the brain. It happens when we're getting music and movement involved, where we're doing action songs, where we're dancing, moving. That's all the kinesthetic learning. So when you combine it
Absolutely.
all together, it's just way more fun and engaging for students. And also for us as teachers, educators, parents, it's really regulating for us to sing. Because when we sing, you need to sing and then you can take a breath. Whew, you know? So it's that's really important and regulating for us. And for children, particularly our vulnerable children in the classrooms who might be from a trauma background, it's where it's less threatening when we sing an instruction or we are using music or rhythm, as opposed to if we are being firm and think we're giving an instruction in a really firm way. It's way less
It
threatening for our
immediately
brains.
activates the threat response, doesn't it? Sorry to cut you off.
Absolutely.
And that's what, and it's one of the things that I have realized through the unfurling of my own beautiful ADHD brain is that I actually often sing a lot when I talk. And I've actually met lots of other ADHDs who do the same. I don't know why. It's just one of our amazing things that we project out into the universe. And it also leads into a really big part of the therapeutic educational approach around playfulness. Do you know what I mean? In that, there's such a fine line, isn't there, when you're an educator between being playful with your students and still sort of having that element of, okay, everything's under control here. Do you know what I mean? Whereas kids can often, sometimes go to the dark side, as I call it, if we give them too much playfulness. So it's a bit of a dance that we have to kind of learn as educators, isn't it? About knowing how much to give and how much to pull back. And sometimes that's a bit of trial and error as well.
Yeah, I'd say just on that, Chrissy, it's about having a look at when we think of regulation, sometimes we need to upregulate. We need to add more energy to a classroom. Everybody might come in quite tired and flat, and maybe we need to start the day with a dance, with a song, with a sing, a big karaoke style or something. But other times people might come in and we notice that it's a little bit wobbly, and that's when we might think we need to do something or use music in a really intentional way to downregulate, to help calm the stress of the room. So it's kind of really using music in that intentional way of, do we need to put on something to pump us all up or to intentionally calm us all down?
And interestingly, I remember when I was talking doing a school PD as well, talking to the staff who had a very particularly challenging cohort of kids that were bringing in a lot of energy off the yard, like lots of behavioural conflicts on the yard that were sort of transferring back into the classrooms. And one of the things we spoke about is that you can use music, but what a lot of educators do is these kids come in, like you said, really heightened, really escalated, and we put on relaxation music. And we're not matching where they're at energetically. Do you know what I mean? And it's almost like sometimes it's meeting them where they're at and then tapering off the tempo to help them down regulate rather than just expecting them to shift from hyper aroused to calm. Do you know what I mean? Or regulated.
Absolutely. The word for that in the music therapy research is ISO principle. So it's just exactly what you said. It's meeting a child or where they're at and then trying to shift them. So if we've got lots of energy, maybe starting with the lots of energy with a big song, big dance, big movements, and then trying to calm and bring it down to where you're actually hoping to get everyone to.
Love that. So what would you say then is the difference between music teaching and using music for well-being?
Yeah, well, definitely. If you think about school music lessons or instrumental music teaching and things like that, we've really got outcomes that we're working towards in terms of musical outcomes. And often we're working towards a performance or something. Whereas when we're talking about music for well-being and music in the classroom and music in everyday life, We're talking about music where it's not necessarily focused on we're wanting to improve our singing or we're working towards a performance. It's we're using music in that really intentional way throughout our day to help support us, to help us and the children that we teach and care for to feel regulated, to feel happy, engaged, connected, so that they're ready to learn. Because that's what we know from all the research, isn't it? That if children aren't regulated, then we can't connect with them. And if we can't connect with them, well, we can't teach them. So that's where music plays this really special role where we're supporting and fostering this really good, healthy, positive feelings in a classroom or in an early childhood environment. And we're really trying to use the elements of music to support positive relationships, play, fun, joy, all of it. And
And
that's what
I
will
talk
help.
about a lot to teachers about this. It's more about a state of being than doing, right? It's more
Absolutely.
about an energetic force, or like you said, the environment or the classroom energy that we are responsible for creating, like, the classroom climate sort of thing, and that children will energetically tune into what we're putting out there. Do you know what I mean? It's so
Yes.
beautiful.
Yeah, and there's a lot of school can't now, and that's increasing. And I think, well, why not try something like creating a creative classroom environment, a classroom where maybe there is the child's favorite song that they get to choose and play and share with their peers, where there is a classroom culture where it is about connecting together through musical games or things like that, rather than us just looking at brain breaks being on a screen or different ways of where a lot of our learning is sort of desk-based. Particularly some of our wellbeing programs in schools, they are all sort of template form where it's about drawing or writing. Whereas if you think about that beautiful top that you're wearing there today, if you think about our First Nations culture, the oldest culture that's existed here for 65,000 years, knowledge is not shared through writing or reading or the giving lectures. Knowledge is shared through singing, through dancing, through the rhythm of walking country together. There's the song lines across our country that's how knowledge was shared, and that's the knowledge that exists in our country. So what we don't want to do is all of a sudden we've got children in these classroom environments. We don't want to take away all of this knowledge that we could be sharing and delivering through trying to create a creative classroom, for really good well-being. So,
Amazing. And I think it's one of the things that we've got to really fight for in education to reclaim is bringing back the arts, because we know that when things are cut, my girlfriend, who's an amazing music teacher and just runs an incredible program at her local school, and with all of the new rules and regulation that the education department loves to throw in, she had her beautiful end of year concert cut, and they had to be really creative about how they could still put that together for the kids. And it's like, it's so important. And teachers talk a lot about the curriculum being so rammed, that they have to get through so much content and all that sort of stuff. And it's using music as a therapeutic tool shouldn't be extra. It should just be a part of our educational practice, right? And brains, we know, love safe, predictable routines, rhythms, all those sorts of things. Music for transitions that help kids, move on to the next task. We put music over at the bell, as the signal to everybody, playtime's up. So there's so many different little ways we can use music within schools. But I think also fundamentally it has to be valued by leadership and really encouraged as well as an educational tool. So,
And it
oh, sorry, yeah, I'd love to hear
absolutely,
your
I just
thoughts on
don't want
that.
it to be thought of as the cherry on top. It just needs to
Totally.
be embedded throughout the rhythm of the day. And you're right, yes, from leadership, but also this is something that individuals can start doing within their classroom. Because as we said, it's just give it a go. It's free, it's cheap, and just trying to create that within classrooms. And then once you have the success of that can then roll out across that ripple effect across schools.
And I guess, for some of us, it comes really naturally. And for others, it feels like a bit of a chore, or it's not part of our natural way of communicating or connecting with kids, I suppose. And I guess that's why for me, when teachers hear about actually how it enhances and improves brain development, and like in terms of kids' work output and capacity and engagement, then that can often get them over the line to actually give it a crack. So, how can you share some examples then about how can music support learning and development? Like we've sort of crossed over some of those things, but like I can think of some really clear examples with ADHDers, especially around work output, letting them use music as a motivational tool to increase dopamine, to get them over the line with a pretty boring or mundane act, like maybe a writing activity, which we know many of our ADHDs couldn't really care less about. What about, are there some other really little, like simple activities that you can think of for how teachers can incorporate music into learning?
Absolutely. Well, that's a great one to start with when you're thinking about ADHD. Because sometimes we say, finish this piece of writing and then you can have the reward, as opposed to, how about we start with the reward, which might be, let's do a quick rhythm game, a quick bit of movement, or some sort of tuning in activity to the learning that involves singing, music, dancing, getting some rhythm into your bodies, because we know rhythm is really regulating, and rhythm has a lot of these same pathways in the brain that are building our executive function skills, like our planning, organizing, listening, paying attention, all of these. So why not start with the tuning in experience of really getting our brains, giving them that dopamine hit, getting ready, being connected to our peers through all doing the same rhythm game at the same time. Getting that big burst of dopamine, feeling really good, and then getting ready for the learning rather than saying, do this, and then you get that good time. So start with that. That's how we tune in. And definitely that's what I support teachers and educators to do in the early years, because inviting children as young as like 2, 3, 4 to sit during a mat time, well, always you have to start with rhythm, put a bit of rhythm in the body to get ready for the learning before you're going to read the story, because otherwise it becomes the stop, no, wait, don't touch them, sit up straight. And we go straight into that kind of behavior management, classroom management sort of, negative sort of realm, rather than starting with the positive of connecting through music and dance and joy and rhythm and then doing the task. So I think quick wins in the classroom could be things like that. A quick bit of a rhythm game, maybe a quick karaoke song. For some people, once you build your confidence up, it's maybe having a class anthem where, people can, that you can sing as a class, because we know when you talked earlier on about what does it bring to the brain when you sing things and everything, there's so many positive neurochemical processes that are happening. It's the dopamine when we're singing with others. So much research from choirs about the great, the oxytocin and all of the great feelings that we have through singing with other people and being connected to other people through this shared experience of music, dance, singing, rhythm. So quick wins might be that, some karaoke, some a rhythm game, getting away from the screens, I think, doing a quick game sort of outside in nature as well. In the early years, even just freeze games, starting and stopping, we're training our brains there, you
Yeah,
know.
and even I can just think of a quick win that I use with my little guy this morning because, I use a lot of declarative language with him rather than directives, which I think as teachers we use a lot of direct instruction. We ask kids to do a lot, whereas we can have a bit more fun with it, be a bit more indirect. And one of his jobs is Monday, is bin day, to put out the bin. And instead of saying to him, "Hey, mate, can you put out the bin today?" which I can guarantee you he would have said no thanks to, I just started singing. Bin, bin, put it in the bin. Today is Monday. Put it in the bin. And he's like, "Oh, I can do that for you, Mum."
I want to do that for you. Like, I mean, I want to put the bin out. You know, that's the
Mean,
joy,
putting out
isn't
the
it?
bin. I mean, nobody wants to do that, right? And I think sometimes we expect kids, to do all of these really mundane tasks around the classroom, like pick up rubbish off the floor and or line up straight and all those sorts of things. And it's like, well, how can we just inject a little bit of playfulness, a little bit of music, a little bit of fun into it? And you will see an increase in kids' willingness to get on board. And even in that example, I didn't even actually ask him to do it. He knew the signal, he knows it's his job, and I approached it in a really indirect, playful, musical way. And tick, off he goes out the door with the rubbish bin. So It really does work, people. I'm here to tell you. Pip and I are here to tell you.
I
Get
want
your
to
head
put Chrissy's
around
bins out.
the
Gosh, yes.
instructions. You can try that one with your kids tonight, see
I
how it
will
goes.
do. Bin, yeah,
And
no.
I do think that part of one of my gifts as well with AD, having ADHD is I can make up little rhymes and ditties in my head really, really easily, you know, and I've written books and all that sort of stuff. And so it is one of my strengths. And I that's why I just want to say to people, if it doesn't come naturally for you, there are so many out there. Just Google them. Do you know what I mean? And just have a practice singing them yourself until you become more confident doing it, because you will see the benefits.
Absolutely.
I'm just thinking about too, because I know, you know, when I've worked in classrooms with a broad range of gorgeous little humans, some of our neurodivergent friends especially don't like loud music. Or then we get kids saying things like, oh, I hate this song, or this sucks, or do you know what I mean? And then all of a sudden, it can create some conflict in the room, especially for neurodivergent kids, but you know, neurotypical kids too. My daughter has said to me that, you know, she still sings Frozen at school, and the grade five boys tease her, and oh, Frozen's for babies, and you know, and all that sort of conflict that our kids sort of have to navigate as well. So, got any tips around that?
Absolutely. I think that's right from term one, week one. You're setting up the classroom culture of we all belong in this classroom. And then what you're setting it up when you're about to start sharing, or you're inviting children to each bring their own song, their favorite song at the moment to share with the class. You're setting it up with those really clear, golden norms of like, everybody's contribution is valid and respected, and it might not be your preference, but it's equally as valid and wonderful. So yes, and then in terms of the noise, I think, so sometimes, like, we know our children have noise cancelling headphones and things like that, but always I notice, particularly in the early years work that I do, if there's one child that there's a loud drum or something that instantly wants to grab their ears, often it's that I invite them to have their turn first, and they have their turn and really enjoy making the sound because they're in control and can produce the sound themselves, and so it's very much in control, and then they can, that's often then they transition off to their free play, which can be away from the sound. So often I'd say as well, just being aware of maybe where that's coming from. That might be really hurting because they're not in control of other people making that sound. So, and then if you're doing drumming things and everything, it's maybe about getting outside. So to really make sure that you're not in the teeny tiny space of a echoey room. But you're right, the sound environment is really, really important. It's always really important for us to consider about what's going on for the sound environment and when to actually just turn it all off or go outside and just be with sort of natural sounds, just to really, because we're processing a lot all the time with our ears, so it's really important to calm
Oh,
that all down.
you know, it is one of the biggest challenges. Let's acknowledge that for our amazing teachers who are listening, you know, trying to navigate the complexities around meeting the sensory needs of all the kids in our classroom, you know, and once again, not everything that we do is going to land with every child that we work with. And so I love that the golden norms of, you know, the classroom. This is where we all belong. We all accept each other, and not everything's about you all the time. And sometimes you're going to like music, and sometimes you're not. You know what I mean? It's music is such a personal preference too, isn't it? You know, and I think that what I often say to my kids as well is that it's about the feeling that music gives you in your body. You know, like I can shift the funk in our family and classroom, you know, previously, just through very strategically playing music, you know. Or often I even say to my son, you know, if he's having a particularly, you know, tricky day, I say, okay, come on, let's go for a drive and let's just crank the tunes. You know, we go out, I go through the drive-through, get a coffee, or we might go through the car wash, or like I know you can't use that strategy at school, obviously, but it is just a really good example of how powerful music is. And I do, you know, I say shake it off, shake it out of your body, you know, or for some of these kids who carry, you know, so much emotion and sometimes anger and big feelings in their body, music is such a great way to sort of release the tension and try to get it out. Do you know what I mean? Because they don't realize they're carrying it.
Yeah, you're right. So the equivalent of going in the car and pumping the tunes would be at school, going for a walk together with a child, not where we're shaming them that they've done the wrong thing and they have to walk with the teacher on yard duty, but instead, like, let's walk the yard together and, you know, sort of using that rhythm and movement. It's about having a speaker on hand in the classroom to, like, when the class needs to pump the tunes and get it all out. And we're able to educate and model for children of this is how I'm feeling, so this is maybe what I need. So it's really important that we're looking after the well-being of teachers and educators as well. This isn't just the focus on students and what they need to be well in the classroom to have good well-being, and it's also about us as teachers. Like, when we're setting up our classrooms in the morning, do we need to pump our tunes for ourselves to really get in that, you know, to sort of upregulate ourselves while we're setting up the classroom? And how about at the end of the day, instead of going straight to a colleague and going, "Oh, that was the worst day ever," how about instead we just take a moment to put on one of our favorite songs? And then see if we're moving our bodies and singing and joining in that, how does that then feel for us before we then go talk to our colleague or before we then go to our staff meeting? And how about at the end of the staff meeting, at the end of the day, you're coming home tired. Are you intentionally using music for you in the car as that transitional phase between, you know, being at school and going home? So
Oh, can you imagine? Can you? I'm just reflecting on some of my, staff meetings, or, I think sometimes in education we're so formal in some of these meetings, and obviously we're professionals and all that sort of stuff. But it's like, imagine if we started a staff meeting with a song and everybody was singing, or we did some rhythmic drumming, or, I mean, can you imagine how much more effective that professional development would be for those educators as well? And for, strengthening relationships between staff. And I mean, it's not rocket science, people. There is so much research around that, the positive impacts of music and singing on the brain. So where can people find you, and where are you sprinkling your wonderful magic with the work that you're doing? Tell me more. You and I could talk all day about this.
I think so. Well, I'm the director of Using Music. So Using Music is a consultancy for, at the moment, we've got a lot of focus in the early years. So, like, all around Victoria, going to early learning centres and sessional kindergartens, community kindergartens, and everything, and supporting, really making sure we're supporting teachers and educators to be able to use music with children. And we're doing bits and pieces of work with schools as well. So, yeah, so we're at usingmusic.com.au. That's how you can find us and stay connected. And we're always trying to share things on socials, particularly at the moment Insta, because that's, you know, you can share music and because sometimes people are wanting a new song, a new idea, but mainly we're about sharing a lot of the knowledge as well and supporting teachers to sustain and to thrive in this really tough job. And music can do that. Music can bring the joy and the fun and the connections with the children that you're really trying to connect with, you know,
Yeah,
the
and I
one.
think, as you said, just drawing this conversation to a close, is, there's such a big emphasis on well-being at the moment. Well-being is at the core of everything that we're, trying to achieve, especially in education with kids who are just really struggling with their mental health. And coming back to using such a simple, readily available tool that is just on hand everywhere we turn. It's just a no-brainer for me, linking it into the brain. And I hope that by having this conversation, we've convinced and encouraged some educators who might be listening, and even families who are listening, to turn the TV off and put the music on instead, pump the tunes and just see and feel the impacts for not only your kids but your entire family. So thank you so much for
Thanks for
inspiring us
having
and
me.
encouraging us to keep improving the lives of the children that we're working with. And thank you for the amazing work you're doing
Thank
too
you.
out
Thanks.
there. And thank you to everybody who's been tuning in and listening today. Go and crank those tunes and have fun, brain builders.
Woohoo. Bins, bins, bins.
You're going to be singing that all day.
Let the bins out. Yeah.
Thanks, Pip.
Bye, Chrissy. Thank you.
Well, gang, that concludes another amazing episode of the Child Charmer podcast. Thank you so much for listening, and I hope you truly love the conversation just as much as me. I'd be so flipping grateful if you took the time to like or share this episode, or even better, leave me a review. Make sure you also subscribe so that you don't miss a thing. Come on over and join me on my Instagram page at Chrissy Chaos to Calm, where I am sharing daily snippets of my life, work, and play, and where I have built the most amazing supportive community, where I am always encouraging them to